You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio. You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza. Only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome, I'm Alan Cardoza, and you're listening to Answers for the Family. Answers for the Family brings you a variety of people that can help you deal with sending your children to specialized schools, working with them, helping build self-esteem, or dealing with them in whatever way that you see fit. I will bring you some incredibly talented and caring people each week as I bring you Answers for the Family. Today, I'm going to have for you a very special guest. Our guest is Marvin Smith. Marvin is a former NFL linebacker who's been tackling bigger problems than running backs these days, educational poverty for one. Marvin is now an ordained minister and founder of a very special charter school in North Long Beach. This is a man that has dedicated his life to others, especially helping young people. Marvin, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Alan. It's a pleasure to be here.
Hey, it's good to have you. And because we're having this show the day after Super Bowl Sunday, we should first start with, what was your thoughts of the Super Bowl?
I think it was a great game. Very entertaining, down to the last play. It was just a great game. On one side, though, I was a little disappointed. I really wanted to see the underdog, which was the Cardinals win. But, hey, it is what it is. Other than that, it was a great game.
All right. Well, I know that there's a relationship, a neurological relationship, a neurological association between the fan and the game itself and how they look at it and how they sort of be a part of it. Tell us a little bit about that and maybe how you use that in your school.
Okay. Well, one of the things that we look at is we call them the fans. and which is really short for fanatic. And sometimes we wonder, how can folks become so enthralled and so, vivacious over a game that they're not even playing? And there's a thing in our brain, this whole thing about mirror neurons. And basically, it's humans are the only species that have it. And what it does, it mirrors behavior. So mm-hmm. It's almost like we can actually in our minds live through the game through others. And that's why as human beings we become so excited over something. And I even playing a game, I go, why are they so excited? I mean, and that's what this whole thing about armchair quarterbacks. Hey, you never played the game, guy. How are you going to, But they think and they feel that they can. And so, but it's that whole thing within our mind with the mirror neurons. And then looking at that, the same thing in our school, I call it behavior modeling.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, tell us a little bit about behavior modeling then.
Well, behavior modeling is this whole form of aspect of a lot of times, even when you're working with kids that are still developing behaviorally, is it's not so much what you teach them, it's what they see. They always say you got to be a great model.
Mm-hmm.
Your actions have to match your words, and it's very disconnectful when you look at a kid and you're talking with them. You're saying one thing, you're doing something else. That's why they say kids are very authentic. They can read through all the stuff because they're watching you.
Mm-hmm. Well, you bring up modeling, and I know that there's been a lot of controversy in regards to if an athlete is a role model. We have Charles Barkley who said, I'm not a role model. Your father's a role model. Don't do what I do. But yet at the same time, I think it's something that really can't be controlled. I mean, I think that they are role models. I mean, sports figures are role models, and kids are looking up to them if they want them to or not.
Right. I mean, Alan, that is true. I don't, we say things, and I think even Charles Barkley recanted that saying, but it was at that time it was a marketing ploy, and he meant well in what he was saying, that hey, first it starts at home.
Right.
But unfortunately in today's society, there it's the home, the unit of family, the connectedness is not there. There are so many distractions, there's so many, our kids as a parent, I compete against, the internet, TV, social life with other
right.
kids. I mean, there's a lot of factors that when I was growing up and you and I were growing up, it wasn't there. You know, mm-hmm. was very single-minded, and so things have changed. And I just believe that we have, as a society, we got to understand where we're at, and we have to change with time.
Mm-hmm. And I know that, and you're doing that now with your charter school. Now, explain to people. I think a lot of people out there may not know exactly what a charter school is. Can you break that down for us?
Yeah, and real simple. A charter school is a public school, and it's funded through, you know, they call it ADA, average daily attendance. Just like any other public school. But what's unique about a charter school, the reason why it was even created was to be in small, its autonomy of size, to be small, and to be innovative in its design and curriculum. So trying to help reach kids that are not normally getting, are not being met in a traditional classroom. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've gone through, and all the studies show now that we have, there's multiple learning styles, and unfortunately, how we taught 100 years ago, which is the same concept today, it one shoe doesn't fit all. And it's basically adapting, trying to bring it, I look at it the same thing in industry with art, research and development. R&D was always created to be in a small design environment to create something new, innovative, that works. And if it works, then you bring it to production. And I really believe charter schools are there to help, you know, infuse continued development within public education.
Mm-hmm. Well, and with your life experience, I mean, you've had a wide range of things that you've done. I mean, from professional athlete to pastor, you know, what do you bring to the table as far as all of these experiences to helping kids today?
There's a couple factors. And I, you know, would have to say, first of all, my love for God and wanting to do the right thing for the right reason. And then outside of that is, as we talk about being a founder of a very unique school, is my wife. Mm-hmm. Really, we are co-founders. And sometimes the way society, you know, we always look at, well, they look at me. But mm-hmm. I would say without her and that support and her, and who's another person who's very articulate, very intelligent, she brings other factors to the table to make that strength. And it's like a family. And, mm-hmm. and even with the school, we approach it as a family unit.
Okay. Now, what inspired you to start this particular school?
Well, you know, I had been involved. My wife and I, we started a after-school program about 10 years ago, which was Corporate Kids Cyber Club. And the whole concept was to reach these kids in underserved communities who didn't have access to technology. Really, it was kind of looking at closing the digital divide. You know, that whole thing with the have and have not. Some kids, because the technology was very expensive 12, 10 years ago, that they didn't have access. And so we decided, kind of with a technical background, was to create an environment that kids could come and get involved with leadership, technology, and entrepreneurship.
Great. Now, what is the name of this particular school?
Oh, the school is Micro Enterprise Charter Academy. And as those who have followed the progression of where we started, they say it's CK2, which is Corporate Kids Cyber Club, on enhancement mm-hmm. protein, beefed up.
That's right.
Don't want to say steroids, you know.
Right.
That's not good. But no.
Well, that's okay. okay, what kind of kids do you have there?
What is unique about our program? Another factor outside of our curriculum is the. We work with kids that we targeted affordable housing, which affordable housing would be considered like subsidized housing units and things of that nature. So we specifically targeted those kids. But how we even started the school was the fact that we were doing a project with HUD, affordable housing, and NASA. And what happened, there was a complex in North Long Beach, was a 30-acre complex that was having a lot of problem with gangs, just a lot of social wheels. And so through this unique project, a pilot project, we became the entity that came in to do after-school programming to really try to help reach the teens. Because a lot of times when you're having problems in communities, it's those teens that are that has all this energy, not focused. And, you know, a lot of times these kids are dropping out of school, not to say that they're not smart, but it's not, like I said, schools are competing against the internet and everything else, just like as
right.
parents.
Mm-hmm.
So it made it very difficult. So that's we came over like 5 years ago to start this project, and we did. It was a very successful project. And in the interim, you know, I was talking with my wife, and we were kind of looking at some of the basic instructional things. And I was talking to some of the kids, and I'm going, "Hey, Johnny, what are you doing during the day?" Because what I found out, some of their basic skill sets they did not have. And I'm going, how could you be in grade X and only be comprehending at grade Z?
Right.
And there's a gap. And I'm going, something's wrong. And as I continued to do more research and I started talking with the kids, and they were telling me, "Hey, Mr. Marvin, you don't understand. I'm not, only thing, when I go to school, I'm more concerned about watching my back than trying to learn something." So, and we even look at even Maslow's, hierarchy of learning. The thing is, when you're in a primal state, it's fight or flight. So, you know, the kid's not, you know, if he's worried about gang activity, he's not worried about the square root of something. He's right. Worried about, I got to survive. And the brain shuts down from learning. So looking at that was, wait a minute, these kids need to be in a safe environment. They need to be nurtured. Some of the basic social skills they weren't getting. And so it's just, we needed to create an environment for that. And so I had a chance, looking at some of the powers to be that we were in partnership with, I had a chance to talk with the councilwoman for the district that we ran, and I was sharing with her, which she was really excited about our program. And I started talking about this issue with the school. And we kind of, in discussion, said the best solution probably would be a charter school. Mm-hmm. And because it gives you the autonomy of independence, small classrooms, it gives you a chance to work these kids who need a lot of work.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, along those lines, what does a normal day look like for one of these students? And take a couple of minutes and walk us through what the normal day is and how that differs from your typical public school setting.
I don't know if it would be typically different. Outside looking in, it may look similar. But I believe it's part of the I call it the MECA way, which is Micro Enterprise Charter Academy for short, MECA, MECA. We call it the MECA way, and it's just the methodology and the approach. One thing I really believe, which is much different than our school, we don't approach it from pedagogy, from the standpoint of academia. We approach it behaviorally, because a lot of times you can't get to the academics until you deal with the social-emotional aspect of learning. So what we do, we approach the social-emotional. And in doing that, the beginning of the day, we start our day off with, we call it advisory groups. And what's unique about our advisory, we're actually teaching these kids, training them in the area of emotional intelligence. Mm-hmm. And so that's really unique. It's giving them a skill. It's giving them a language to start utilizing that instead of dealing with aggression. Because when you deal with, individuals that come from a high-stress environment, basically chronic stress, there's a lot of factors that the studies show that the brain, it shrinks in size because it's all primal. And so to be able to now work with these kids, give them skills to start talking about feelings. When we start talking about emotional intelligence, it's such a controversy topic because everybody, that's like for girls, mm-hmm. And we've done some work with some consulting with the NFL mm-hmm. Players Association, and we did a study on emotional intelligence, and it's just, there's a lot of great studies that are coming out now in neuroscience is saying that if we learn how to master our emotions, to navigate them through the process, it's a matter of they will serve us well. They either serve us well or they serve mm-hmm. us not well. And you know what happens. A lot of times kids are not developed in those skill sets. And what happened? Even some adults, really.
Right.
and the first thing we want to do is we want to get mad. It's like, mm-hmm. and it's like, whoa, come, hey, what's, let's work through the process. So they go through we have 20 minutes in the morning, and we call it check-in. So mm-hmm. what we do in the morning is like, hey, Johnny, how are you feeling? What's going on? How was your evening? And just get them to start kind of, what we say, manage their environment, manage the focus, their thoughts and direction for the day. And then we talk about goal setting for that day. And then we go through and we have their regular core classes. Mm-hmm. And then in the afternoon, we get into the extracurricular activities like the electives,
right.
And then we close out the day, and we have another 20 minutes of the advisory groups, which is another session of emotional intelligence. So now mm-hmm. we call it reflection. Right. How was your day? What did you learn? What was good? What did you not like? Well, what about that incident? How would you handle it differently next time? And what we do them in small groups, so all the kids are involved.
Right.
So that's.
See, I think that's great. Now, Is it possible that the school districts or the Department of Education as a whole may be looking at something like this, like a pilot program, to where they can see, and if this works and if the statistics are good coming out, this might be something that's added to our public school system?
Yes. And from the standpoint that when we first presented to the state, I mean, when they looked at our design, they basically said this is probably one of the best designs that they've seen for a charter school in a long time. And being more specific and answering your question, our school is being looked at as a model. Mm-hmm. And especially a model for education in urban inner city, which is a different animal when you talk about suburbia.
Right. Well, you know? And just as you said before, the concept of fight or flight, it's very hard to focus on reading, writing, and arithmetic when you're worried about if you're going to make it through that day without getting in a fight or being in some manner harmed.
Yeah, exactly true. So part of our design is you got to have, you know, and we talk about the brain-based principles of learning. There's mm-hmm. a lot of everything that we've done at our school is by design. There's nothing by accident. The color schemes, everything is about how we're nurturing the brain for learning. And so even our environment is a safe, clean environment. Our furniture, it was designed for the school. I mean, you know, we have even laptops. The kids right now, the goal is to be one-on-one laptops, and we have a partnership with Apple Computers, and because we know that's another tool to help facilitate learning. But right now, we're a 2-to-1 laptop, so the kids are getting a lot more time on with technology than they would in the past. So when you start to tie all those things together, and one thing the state, you know, their comment, and I continue to kind of chuckle and with a smile on my face, it goes, you know, we like your design, but it's very aggressive in its approach. I'm like, yes.
Yeah.
And it needs to be aggressive.
And what's the downside of that? You know, that would be my question to them. And aggressive in this situation is what? How is that wrong? I think it's great.
Yes.
Now, I mean, how does a parent get a student to your school? I mean, in other words, you know, it's, you know, do they need to be in a particular district, or is it the type of thing that they make application, and do they have to do that prior to the school year?
Well, as we said before, we are a public school,
right?
So it's just like any public school in any environment. It's free of charge, and basically, it's for us, it's first come, first serve. Yeah, there's an application process, but then again, it's free,
right?
And normally, and let me kind of some of the nuances of charter schools. To become a charter school, you either have to be chartered or petitioned under a school district. And if you're denied at that level, then you have to be petitioned under the county district. And if you're not at that level, then you have to be chartered at the state district, at the state level. Well, we are chartered at the state level. And there's, I believe at this point, there's probably 13, maybe 14 charter schools. There's over 1,000 charter schools in California. But I think there's only like 14 that are actually state authorized. So what that means, when you become state authorized, it puts you in a position as being an LEA, a lead educational agency. Otherwise, you become your own district. So we are basically our own district. And it's, like I say, it's a pilot. And so what happens, any kid in the area can come to our school. And what happens, first come, first serve, and after that, it's a waiting list. But as I said before in opening, part of our design was specific to target kids that are coming from subsidized housing.
Okay.
Because they are probably, when you look at opportunities, at the bottom of the realm of opportunities. You know, 95% of our population are single parent mothers. And so.
Wow. Wow.
90%. 95%.
Wow. Oh, okay. Well, you know what? With that, let's take a break. We got a little break going, and we will be back shortly. Now, let's hope that I connected this correctly. There we go.
Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shield specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with. in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you.
We're back with Marvin Smith, and we're talking about charter schools. So my question now is, what is the mission of your charter school?
Well, the mission for Micro Enterprise Charter Academy, MECA, it's a rigorous college-based or college preparatory program. And basically what we're trying to do is to obtain the skills necessary for each kid to be for life success educationally, technologically, economically, and socially.
Okay.
Really, we want to see all these kids go to college. I mean, that's the ultimate goal. But more importantly, it's preparing these kids for the real world, 21st century. And looking at, you know, I one thing that we see around our school, you know, I tell our staff, we want to think global because we're talking about the global economies, but we gotta have to act local. And so a lot of times, some of the kids that we're dealing with, they've never had an opportunity, you know, even though they're close to the beach, never go to the beach. You know, so here it is, we're talking, you know, in the brain, we're talking about the brain-based principle, it tries to wrap itself around concepts. So if we're talking about, you know, Europe, if we're talking about the ocean, if we're talking about things, part of the principles is to actually then put kids in that environment. I had a friend, a colleague, he came, and Dr. Joseph Wu, he's a renowned neuropsychiatrist. So he came over last week to visit the school, and it was very interesting. And you know, here's a guy that deals with, you know, dysfunction and behavior at its highest level. And he was thought we had a very great design in what we're doing at our school. And just the short time that we've had our school going, the outcomes that we're having. And he had a colleague with him that was from Ashley. She's a doctor from Sweden. And she got really excited, and because we're talking about global markets, but thinking thinking locally. And she had brought up, well, you know, I have a friend who are teachers in Sweden, and maybe we could do some internet conferencing or Skype where the kids can now start having, they can start communicating and have classwork together, you know, utilizing the internet. And I thought it was great. And then we started talking even beyond that. I said, well, hey, once we start that, then we have to make a trip for the kids can go to Sweden and the kids from Sweden can come here. And she goes, oh, you don't understand. When you talk LA to Swedish kids, oh, they think it's the world.
I'll bet. Oh, yes. And probably vice versa.
Yes.
Okay. We have some listener questions that have come in, of which I'm very thankful for. I want to tell everybody out there, please keep sending those in. We appreciate you emailing them in or calling them in or even going to the blog and sending it in. And for those of you that want to continue to do that, you go to answersforthefamily.com. That's answers, the numeral for thefamily.com. There's a blog there. We love your comments, and we try to get to all of your questions. Which are pretty varied in this situation. One of the questions is, you know, what is the age range of the students at your school?
Oh, Alan, before we go forward, did you read my contract when it came over, right? And I said I don't answer questions to the general public. Gotta give you a hard time, Alan.
There you go.
No, the age for our kids, we by design, we started with sixth grade. We're actually chartered 6 through 12. So 6th and 7th grade, we started with this year. Next year, we'll add a new 6th grade class. So we'll have 6 through 8 to eventually we'll have 6 through 12. And part of that design was to actually create a culture and climate. And then the autonomy of independence is, the goal is at some point going from directed learning to self-directed. And where the kids actually take responsibility for their school.
Oh, that's great. So in other words, you're adding a year each year, but you're adding it at the sixth grade level until they continue up to the point of 12.
Yes.
And so in however many years that'll be, it will be a but it'll continue to go sixth grade, or will you get to a point to where you'll start working down from there as well?
Well, at this point, I don't know. At this point, you know, the biggest, when you know, everything's research-based. When we looked at where you have to reach a kid before they go south, and then even looking at the things that you have done with West Shield and the teen transport, a lot of times the problem we're having, it starts at about the sixth grade. And they, you know, and that's where behavior is starting to change, and they're going one way or the other. So we know if we could catch them at the sixth grade, really fifth, I mean, studies are showing fourth grade, third grade, kindergarten, but critical is sixth grade. So that's why we started there.
Okay. We've got another question actually from one of our international listeners that says, do you think that what you learned in pro sports has helped you in what you do today with children?
Most definitely. Pro sports was, first of all, you know, I look at football, there's only been over 12,000 players to ever play the game. And if you look at the population of the U.S. and the world, you're looking at 1% of 1% that even gets the opportunity. But one thing that I learned from the game was hard work, dedication, perseverance, you know, all the things to get you to the pinnacle. And I think, you know, working with kids, you need, it's hard work, it's perseverance. I mean, all the things that it takes, and not just the kids. There's another part of the school aspect that my wife deals a lot with. We both do, but is more so the admin. I mean, the administrative aspect of a school, being a public school, government, you know, there's a lot of bureaucracy, and it's a lot of work. You know, so to be able to continue to work through all that, pro sports helped me a lot.
That's great. And I want to make sure that I cover all the questions that came in. There's one that I didn't expect, but it says, "What's your favorite?" "What was your favorite team to play for, and what's your favorite team now?"
My favorite team to play for is the Raiders.
All right,
I was a Raider at heart. I mean, you know, they always had the mystique, the image of the bad boys. I mean, just a bunch of renegades that came together to do well. And I think what that says to me, ideology, is that, you know, we can have different views, we can have different thoughts, we can be different people. But if you get people working together, one mind, one accord, you can accomplish great things. So that's why I like what the Raiders represented then. Today, it's a different story, you know. But and my favorite team today, I really don't have a favorite team. Truth of the matter, I don't even get a chance to watch sports that much. I'm so in, you know, with my own family and dealing with my family, and then this extended arm of the school was another family, and just. So I don't have a favorite team. I just like to watch a good game.
Yeah.
When I can.
Well, I don't blame you. I'm sort of the same way. Okay, we have one of our people that sent in a question that says, I have a son who's been skipping school on and off for the last year. What can a school like yours offer him, or do you accept kids that are having these types of troubles in their regular public school?
Yes. I mean, that's part of the design of is to meet needs like that. You know, if a kid is skipping school, I, for me, there's questions. I'm like, first, I'd have to ask the question, why is he skipping school? You know, what, you know, a lot of times, you know, we talk about this whole thing about emotional intelligence. And, you know, there's a group that we have partnered with, which is 6 Seconds organization, which they're probably the leader in emotional intelligence worldwide. And what happened, I am master certified. That's where I got my training through them. And one thing that we look at, we call it the iceberg metaphor. See, a lot of times when we look at behavior, we're looking at the 10%, what's above the surface. See, a lot of times we need to look at what are the drivers. And so that's why I would ask the question, what's really going on with Johnny? Why is he skipping school? And I would start there. In our school, these are things that we deal with every day. Well, when we see an incident, the first thing we go to staff and says, okay, yeah, we see him acting out, but what's really going on?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the kid comes from a high-stress environment or whatever it may be. So when we start to look at that, then and you start to deal with things from the social-emotional aspect, because I believe once you capture a student, they will bend over backward to learn. But if it's boring, what's the purpose? If it's not relevant, why do it? So
what you're saying is to continually challenge them.
Yes.
Because I think what we run into a lot is that with a public school system that at times will try to be focused on the middle, And I think we tend to lose the extremely high achievers and we lose some of the low achievers.
Right. Yes, so. That's true. And I don't, you know, and I don't even, yeah, that's true, Alan, because it's almost like there's that 10%. They're going to do well no matter what environment you put them in.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to do well. And there's another 10%. They're going to do bad no matter where you put them. And then there's that, you know, that 80% in the middle that it can go
right
either way. So, and for some reason, unfortunately, we're having a lot more kids are going, they're dropping out a lot more than in the past. And I just really believe it's because, you know, like I said earlier, who's the competition? You know, and the competition is the world, internet, the you know, television, media, iPods, you know, all these things are competition. These kids, I mean, you talk about text messaging, you know, I'm amazed, you know, and some we had to, one of the things we had to end up doing was when our kids come to school, we take all phones, and when they enter the school, no phones.
That's good
because there's a lot that goes on. I mean, they're texting. I mean, it's just you're focusing for their attention, and so you got to capture that, and then you got to be creative in your design to keep them captured.
Yeah. Did you see the commercial for the Super Bowl by Hulu where they were essentially spoofing themselves? And in spoofing themselves, what Hulu is Hulu is this internet site to where you can go and watch just about any television show at any time for free.
Right.
And but they kind of spoofed themselves from the standpoint that they had an actor on that essentially suggested that we've done some studies and determined that we can turn your brain into mush by having you watch television all the time. and I thought, you know, they're really getting close to home on this.
Yes. Well, it's amazing. My dad, who was a professional educator and growing up, and I always remember, you know, watching TV around the house, and he'd go, "You got to get from in front of that thing. That one-eyed monster is not good for you." Mm-hmm. I couldn't. I said, "One-eyed monster? You know,
it's the television.
It's the television." Mm-hmm. And when you look at programming and what's coming out of it, it's not really nurturing. It's something that's occupying time. And one thing that we realize too, when you deal with kids who are in high stress, you know, dealing with social dynamics or crisis, the television becomes an environment for them to kind of. It's a coping mechanism. It's kind of a way of checking out.
Mm-hmm. By the way, you mentioned your father, and one of the questions was, who do you credit for your, I mean, you know, your character, your drive, your concern for the fellow man that really doesn't come out of everybody in our generation?
Oh, man. I guess I was very fortunate, very blessed to have, you know, I look at my parents, you know, as a core. You say the fruit doesn't fall far from the tree.
Mm-hmm.
I had a grandmother that was, grandparents that were very nurturing. And then there were just people on the way. And that's why I can't, when someone says, makes a comment, I achieved this on my own. Anyone has done anything with greatness, there's always been people on the way to help nurture them. And even I look at where I'm at today, you know, even as a leader, you know, I'm still in the making.
Mm-hmm.
You know, until I die, I'm always going to be able to develop skill sets. When I stop thinking I can't learn anything else, I've died.
That's right. I think that works for all of us. Now, you were talking a little bit about dropouts, and I know that you've done some studies and stuff in regards to dropout rates. Tell us a little bit about what you've learned in that area.
We have higher dropout rate today than we've had in the past. There's been some studies, there's research there. The first time in history that we had a comprehensive report from the state of California, Department of Education, talking about the dropout rate. What those numbers are right now, I don't have in front of me, but the numbers were almost like 48%. I mean, it's staggering. And it doesn't, you know, when we start looking at social class and where, it's across the board. It wasn't mm-hmm. that, you know, African-American kids or Hispanic kids, right? You know, it was kind of across the board. And unfortunately, you know, where you have worse school districts and worse environments, it's going to be higher because it's a reflection of the instruction. But that's, to me, that's a failing report card as for us as a society. That's our future, you know. And so for me, I look at, okay, if they're not, and then there's a direct correlation between prison or being within the penal system.
Hold on. Okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh,
something cut in on us.
I was break time.
No,
like the penal system. There's a direct correlation that says if a kid doesn't get his high school diploma, there's a 85% of those who are in prison don't have they never had a high school diploma. So you go, man, wow. So to me, if we start thinking more proactive. And, you know, what it takes to cost us, what, anywhere from $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 a year to keep a youth incarcerated, but then we only want to give $6,000 a year to try to educate them.
Exactly.
Something's wrong with the model. And, you know, and studies, all these studies show that we could take the money we're taking to incarcerate these kids, our youth or teens,
mm-hmm.
if we took 25% of that, we could create a productive taxpaying citizen with a high skill.
Absolutely. And it's not even just for that 1 year, because if we're incarcerating them, that may be 20 years.
Exactly. Because once you hit recidivism, and that's all they know, and then I'm reading reports about how you have these they become, and the neurological part of it is the brain becomes adapted to the environment, and all of a sudden you get out and you have no skills. So and they say anytime there's cold weather, the rate, you know, recidivism goes up, because they know I can get a meal, I can stay warm,
mm-hmm.
I have a roof over my head, and it becomes a place of nurturing, which is really crazy.
I know. Well, and I mean, we're dealing a lot more with gangs now, and in dealing, yes, with gangs, and what we're finding out is that with some of the gangs, that part of what they do as an initiation is to make them do something and get them caught on purpose, so that they start to get a feel for the prison or jail system, so that they're more willing to do what it is they tell them to do, because they realize, you know, it's not as bad as you might think
it is,
because,
yes,
you are going to get a roof over your head, you are going to get three meals, and that they're actually being set up to get caught by their own leaders. They don't know that, but that's actually what's being done, and it's helping to draw that divide between them and the rest of society.
Well, and then there's a psychology behind it as well, because when you take away the element of fear, then you become fearless. So at that point, now you're in the general population. Hey, you're going to go to jail, Johnny. Hey, I don't care.
I've already been there.
Hey, yeah. It doesn't bother me. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm tough anyway. And all that is, that's all falsehoods. Because, you know, there's other studies that show that a human being, would rather be productive in life and doing something worthwhile than the other.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, if you don't have the skills, then you go back to primal. It's that primal living, and now it's about doing whatever it takes to survive.
Well, that's why we need more charter schools like yours. Can you tell them a little bit about what it is, or how do they get a hold of you? In other words, let's say that we have somebody listening out there, and they're going, wow, that's where my child needs to be. How do they get a hold of you? Or how do they get a hold of the school?
Well, the way they would reach the school, they could go a couple things. They can go to our website, which is www.gomecca.org, and they can call the school, and that number is area code 562-630-6096. Once again, that's area code 562-630-6096.
Now, for those of you driving out there and you couldn't write that down, remember, you can also go to answersforthefamily.com, answers4thefamily.com. We will get whatever questions or information you need to Marvin or to the school, and either they will get back to you or we will. Let me make sure I cover a couple more questions here so that I don't get any emails back from somebody who goes, why didn't you ask mine? It says, you seem to live a life that really helps people. Well, I think we covered this with your parents, but it's, you know, where does this inspiration come from?
And as I said earlier, first and foremost for me, it's my faith, and I always say, make a comment. Sometimes the only Bible that someone's going to read is you.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, that whole thing about behavior modeling again is we want to. We just don't want to be religious. We need to act it out. We need to live it. We need to be exactly what it is. And, you know, everybody makes mistakes, but it's being able to look at yourself in the mirror every day and look at continued growth. And I think when you get to the point of really understanding life and who you are, it is outside of self. You know, what else is there in life if you can't help another person?
Yeah. Well, I only wish that more people saw it that way. Now, what can people do now, again, because we're picked up all over the country. So again, because we're going out over the internet, or people are picking us up on their iPhones, their smartphones, or on Skype. What if somebody's in another geographical area? They're not here. They're not close enough to send their child to your charter school. How do they get a hold of somebody within their own school district? Or is there a way they can lobby for more of these things? In other words, you know, you believe in this. I believe in this. How can they lobby to get more schools like this for all of our kids?
Well, and I think that is the big, there's what they call the charter school movement. And part of the goal is to have more schools modeled after this design. And, you know, if you're not in a geographic area, then you could look and see what charter schools are in the area. But one thing I have to warn against or take note to, just like school districts or schools, they're not all equal.
Mm-hmm.
And same thing with charters. They're not all equal. And because you're dealing with methodologies, you're dealing with human behavior, you're dealing with hearts, blood, and all these factors, it makes a difference on how its design is set up. And, you know, one of the things that we're looking at, we're actually looking at replicating the model. And so I'm talking with others about, you know, other parts of the country. And so, I mean, that's another option I'm looking at too, is we got a dynamic board that we've put together. And I have to pop the question. I have to share it right now. Mr. Alan Cardoza, I've been knowing you now for some time, and I've seen your heart for kids, and I've seen the things you've done. And even though at times haven't seen eye to eye, but we've always been in alignment about doing the right thing. And I need another board member with this stellar board that we have, and I would like to twist your arm to be part of that. So, well, and my reason being too, because as we can, mm-hmm. so we can replicate and expand the model. It's about the kids. It really is about the need.
Well, I mean, because this is radio and not television, for those that can't see Marvin, if he twisted my arm, he could get pretty much anything he wanted. But it's true. We've been friends for a very long time, and I would be honored to be a part of that. I think it's just such a positive thing for all of our kids out there. So, yes, absolutely, I'd be honored.
Well, thank you, Alan. So, anyway, answering the question again, is that they can contact me or this point contact you, and we're I think part of the board, and we're looking at you know, we're going to start a capital fundraising campaign, and we just believe I can't say we're the only answer. We're an answer to something unique and dynamic, and so willing to partner, willing to do what it takes to give opportunities to those who need it.
Okay, but now let's say that somebody's in Raleigh, North Carolina. Who do they go to? In other words, they're not going to be able to send their kid to Long Beach, California. But, I mean, do they go directly to the school district? Do they go at the state level? Who do they go to say, hey, you guys have an example right here. Why don't we have one of these in our particular community?
What they would probably do is do an internet search and find out and search charter schools in the area and start there. And then start to ask the school district, see what their relationship is with charter schools. Because some districts are charter friendly and some are not. And, you know, there's a whole reason behind that, which that's another show. But for me, the whole purpose is about meeting the needs of our kids. And if we need a couple different designs to make it happen, yes. So they would need to, you know, do some research. Okay. And because charters are kind of popping up all over because of need.
Okay. So if I hear you right, then what you're saying is, first of all, check out and see if you have good charter schools in your own community. If you don't, at that point, go to your school district, go to your representative and say, you know, our community needs charter schools like this for our children.
Yes. Okay. And at that point, they may, you know, charters are basically founded by parents, mm-hmm. professionals, those who are part of school districts, teachers, who just want to have that autonomy of a different design, different methodology.
Which brings me to a great point. I mean, can they get involved? I mean, from the standpoint of, can they get involved either from a standpoint of donating their time, donating their money, being involved in fundraisers? I mean, is there all different aspects of how they can get involved, not only for their kids, but for everybody's kids?
Everybody's kids. And I'm excited because, as we said, we're going to start our capital fundraising campaign, and we're looking at raising about $40 million. We're going to build new facilities. And it's to me, is to have this real slick, sleek, lean, mean machine, and that others can go, I like it. Can we have one here? You know, I was part of that one. You know, so from the standpoint of, you know, we're going to be looking at the opportunity for those to help donate to the cause. And I kind of, our concept is, you know, when you say a number like 40 million, you go, wow, that's a lot. Yeah, not really. But to me, if you have a lot of people giving a little, mm-hmm. you meet your needs.
Well, with 40 million, how much of that do you need to come in from private sources? Like you said, that for instance, Apple is donating computers. How much of that do you need from private sources, and how much is the school district providing to that?
Well, we've done a kind of a cost analysis, and we're looking at, it takes about 12 for our model, about 12 grand for a kid to go per year, mm-hmm. and so if you look at that, half of that money is, this is the uniqueness of a public charter school, half of that money is funded through the state, okay. and federal. So then we're looking at the other part, that other 6 grand, basically private donations and things of that nature. So it kind of, in brief, that kind of gives you an overview.
So about half.
About half. Words,
yeah,
yes.
About half the money you need from the private sector.
Yes. And truthfully, everything's based by design and research. Public education of the 21st century, for it to be effective, truly effective, it has to be public-private partnerships. That's the only way. We cannot do standalone as we've done in the past. Mm-hmm. The model's not going to work. And the other part of that is, how do we educate a kid into the 21st century and prepare them for jobs that haven't even been developed yet?
Absolutely. And for people to understand, we're competing on a world market. We had a situation, I mean, 20, 30 years ago, kids weren't competing on a world market. They were competing locally and maybe statewide. Now they're competing on a global market. And if other countries are educating their children at a greater rate than we are, we're going to fall behind. For us to move back to the leadership position that we've had, we need to have these kids educated properly. And I love the fact that you said that Apple is providing, because I think that really progressive corporations, they're going to see that if they're going to get good quality employees to help build their corporation, then they need to have more schools like this that are going to get them prepared for college and for higher education.
Well, and I look at too, Alan, I mean, we've already started this, I call it the caveat of partnerships, which is unique. I mean, we've been working with NASA. We got the City of Long Beach Housing Authority Department is involved. We're looking at partnering now with the Police Department for Long Beach. We're looking at, you know, just some of the service providers, the whole thing with 6 seconds for the emotional intelligence. We have another group, Inside Education, who's helping on curriculum design. So we're looking at this, all of these things, and ultimately, when you bring the corporations to the table, they know they're already projecting years out what kind of workforce they need. And we got ourselves in trouble when we didn't look into the future and we didn't educate our kids and prepare them for this time. And we're talking about technologically prepared. So what happens is now we have to outsource a lot of things that we do. And a lot of the jobs, then, not, they don't stay in America. They go to other countries.
Right.
And at one point, they're saying, well, I'm saving a dollar, but then it's costing you $10 on the back end. Mm-hmm. So in doing so, what has made America America has been, we have been We are the innovators of the world. And if we lose innovation, if we lose that part of our design, which is high-level thinking, we have lost who we are. And so for me now, private, public-private partnerships, you bring the industry to the table, and when they get involved and even help with design and curriculum, it's preparing our future. Mm-hmm. And the other part of that is, you know, to me, I was talking with some individuals about even lobbying the aspect of, you know, be able to create some type of tax stimulus for the corporations where they have the ability now to pour into education, get tax credits, which makes sense. Mm-hmm. And then there's immediate impact for them and the school.
Right.
These kids get trained. And then on the back end, they have a competent workforce.
Wow. You know what? I just looked up the clock. I cannot believe that we are already out of time.
Yes.
And I see a call coming in, but I don't know that I have time to take it. Okay, what I'd like you to do, you mentioned something about a fundraising campaign coming up. Again, how can somebody get involved in that?
They could go to our website,
okay,
and look at what's going on, call the school, or they can call me directly for more information. And we're just kind of starting this effort now. So there's going to be opportunities on the website to donate. It may be, we call it the four T's, time, talent, treasures, and technology. You know, if you can't give of your time, you can maybe give of money. If you can't give of your money, you can give of resources. So all these areas, and we need to stop being limited in our thinking of what it means to make that support. And I think, you know, Alan having the show, gives us the ability, you know, for you to being part of this, to kind of, as we can continue to develop and grow and opportunities. And I just think it's something very unique.
Oh, absolutely. And I will keep doing my part in getting the word out there. Marvin, thank you so much for being here. I can't tell you how much I appreciate it. I do want to have you back because you're just doing incredible things.
Well, I appreciate the time, Alan. And once again, as I said in the beginning, I'm very thankful. I'm just a thankful individual. And I, you know, and for me, it goes back to what I try to model, what we do with the school is, for me, the key is it needs to start at home. And I keep saying without that co-partnership with my wife, it makes a difference.
Mm-hmm. All right. Everybody, again, I appreciate you listening. Keep listening. Send in your questions. Send in your comments. We love it. And we are out of here.
Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shield specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you.